Good evening. James McCanny here, April 30th, 2009, with my Science Hour, going right into the show, and a lot of very interesting stories this past week. I'll concentrate, actually, now the flu is in the news, of course, but I want to review it from my perspective, having lived in Mexico City, seeing the populations there, how they live, and also in the wider country of Mexico and in Latin America in general. Pre-announce somewhat my thoughts that the reporting on this is very strange. Let's put it that way. Given the number of people who are allegedly dying in Mexico, more people die there of minor causes in a day. So I wouldn't exactly, from what's being reported anyway, this is not exactly a pandemic. I'll go into that. Just all I'm saying is that the news reporting isn't adding up. And there's been some very strange reactions from our own Center for Disease Control and Homeland Security. Very strange reactions, and once I explain these to you, I think you'll understand what I'm talking about. Also, earthquake this past week in Mexico also, originating in the Acapulco area, but very much affecting Mexico City. So I'll talk a little bit about the history of earthquakes in that region so you get a better idea of how the dynamics of that work. Starting out, however, first, very interesting in the news this past week, a group of scientists are now stating that an asteroid did not kill the dinosaurs. And what happened, there's an article that occurred in the Journal of the Geological Society that stated that scientists have now done a second pass at attempting to understand the crater that is down off the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico. And, of course, Alvarez and the group of scientists stated that this is back, I think, around 1985, that an asteroid collided with Earth, sprayed up a giant layer of iridium, and at the same time killed off the dinosaur population. And, of course, that has filtered all the way down to the textbooks. It's been repeated and repeated over and over again to the point where it is just kind of common knowledge, so to speak. As Lyndon Johnson once said, one of the great tricksters, one of the great deceivers of our times, as Lyndon Johnson once said, if you repeat something enough times, people will start repeating it, then other people will repeat it, and pretty soon it will be common knowledge and accepted truth. And so let's look at a couple other things. The global warming, everybody repeats that as if it's common knowledge and absolute gospel truth, when in fact there's no validation to that at all. So at any rate, all I can tell you is that for a long time, I've also criticized this idea that that an asteroid killed the dinosaurs. It does not add up. It doesn't explain all of the other things that happened during that time frame. Now, let's look at, say, mountain building. Along with all of these mass extinctions, are mountain building effects all around the world. So that is a very important thing to look at. How did a little asteroid colliding in the Yucatan affect the Alps mountains? Well, obviously that's pretty ridiculous. It didn't. How did it affect volcanoes on the other side of the Earth? Well, one might grasp for straws and imagine that something like that could have happened, but in reality, it's really not what the type of thing that it would take. The scientists that are studying this now, out of Princeton and the University of Lucerne in Switzerland both state conclusively that, let me read the statement here, not a single species went extinct as a result of the Chicxulub, that's a tough one to say, impact crater that was discovered, I believe, in 1978 off the Yucatan Peninsula, just north of Yucatan. Part of it lies in the on land, so to speak, in what we now call the Yucatan Peninsula, and the rest of it lies out in the ocean, and there's clear evidence of a severe impact there. And the dating of that geologically was around 65 million years ago, right around the time when the dinosaurs went extinct at what we call the tertiary Cretaceous boundary. That is the boundary between the tertiary period when the dinosaurs lived and an epoch afterwards where only the very small animals survived, and of course that was the end of the great lizards, if in fact dinosaurs were lizards. But be that as it may, the point here is that the politics of science somewhat rules. And of course we're human, we have to look at data and then agree on things, but sometimes the politics of science rushes to judgment, and then these so-called facts become common knowledge. And one little other item that I must say, put in here, all of these theories have to agree and exclude, let's put it that way, any idea of Velikovsky, that a comet came by Earth, a very large comet, became a planet in the process, the planet Venus. And this, of course, the Venus event was much more recent, within the last 10,000 years, also drastically affecting Earth, causing a near-mass extinction, including the human race, the human population, wiping out vast populations of humans on this planet, and the people who survived carrying on their traditions and cultures over various parts of the world, and then evolving into the races that started to communicate, that started to see each other around, anywhere from the Middle Ages on forward, and of course the discovery of the Americas by Columbus being a prime example. No one even knew this continent was here, let alone highly populated. So, very interesting, but let's get back to the tertiary area where the dinosaurs lived. Now, let me explain exactly what the new studies have found. What they have found is that if you look closely at the dust that came off of the impact in Yucatan, off the crater that remains north of Yucatan, and in fact, by the way, there are many scientists who doubt that that crater is actually due to an impact, that something else actually caused that land formation, but be that as it may, here's what they discovered, that the fossils that are on top of the iridium layer that was originally believed to kill the dinosaurs, the fossils that are on top of the iridium layer are the same fossils that are below the iridium layer up to about 300,000 years after that iridium layer. And then that is where the tertiary Cretaceous boundary exists. And so what they're saying is this is conclusive proof that the asteroid did not kill off the dinosaurs. In fact, right next to that impact zone, it really didn't kill off anything. All of the species remained intact, which brings into question NASA's emphasis on asteroid collisions causing mass extinctions. And of course, you see computer models, you see animations where asteroids collide with Earth, and sends up a vast cloud, and then there's a global winter due to the ash fallout. All of this is computer modeling. What these scientists are saying in a nutshell is that all of that information that's been pounded into the public's head regarding asteroids colliding with Earth and causing Earth-wide devastation, all of that information is wrong. Let me say that again, because it's such an important point, and this is very important for kids, because you are just barraged with this misinformation from NASA. And this is a primary one, in fact, not just kids, adults, scientists, everybody else, that you are barraged by this idea that now appears to be turning out to be totally false, because the primary example that they point to, the tertiary Cretaceous boundary where allegedly the dinosaurs went extinct, their primary example turns out to be false. And they even could point towards what they believe to be the crater, a very large crater hundreds of miles across and off of the Yucatan Peninsula. And now scientists who've gone back and re-examined the area show conclusively that that impact not only did not kill the dinosaurs around the world, but it didn't even kill the dinosaurs or populations in the immediate region around this crater. So, very interesting and, of course, highly controversial. And then, of course, the question arises, well, what did cause the extinction of the dinosaurs? Well, look at all of the other data. And, of course, people come up with, oh, it was due to a supernova from another part of the galaxy. That's one of the common ones you hear, which, of course, is totally false. Supernova blasts don't create mountain building on Earth. So right away, those kind of theories that NASA throws out there as secondary or third-order theories, none of them account for the data, the real data. We probably had a pole shift. There again, scientists don't look for that because they don't believe it could happen. So how do you discover science? How do you make theoretical explanations if you don't include all of the data? We know, for example, that during the last event, the Venus event, which was historically recent, within the last 10,000 years, that the crust and mantle of the Earth shifted by about 40 degrees. The old North Pole was somewhere in the middle of what we now call Ontario. The old South Pole was in the South Indian Ocean near an island called McDonald Island. So, very interesting that science is now showing that this dinosaur extinction event was not caused by an asteroid. In fact, the local population of life back then, the dinosaurs and other species, weren't even affected at all. So look at all of the Discovery Channel, the History Channel, National Geographic, all of these mouthpieces for standard science, including the textbook companies. Look at any textbook for kids today, and you will find that asteroid collision explaining what caused the dinosaur death. You will find that in there as if it were gospel truth sworn fact, when in fact now it's being pointed out that it couldn't have even happened at all. All of the computer modeling, all of the animation. I love how NASA replaces reality with animation. They've hired more Disney animators than Disney has. So, at any rate, I think this is extremely important, because what else does it tell us? What it tells us that NASA is desperately trying constantly to replace reality with anything but the truth. And of course, they never want to get to the point where they talk about what really could be going on, Here again, my plasma discharge comet model explains these events the best of any of these, the mountain building, the extinction events, the fact that the Earth was shaded and shrouded from the sun for probably a significant amount of time, the glaciers that occurred after this. All of this is a mystery to standard science because they don't understand what comets are. One simple little fact that literally, once again, this is 2009, the 30th anniversary of me presenting my plasma discharge comet model at Cornell University, and of course being highly ostracized there for doing that, along with all of the other theories that went with that, that proved that, for example, the Big Bang never happened, because there is another source of redshift out there, etc. But back to the comet theory, when a large celestial object comes into the solar system, it takes the form of a very large comet. They rarely hit Earth or other planets, but when they come through from an action at a distance, that's a term I coined to explain and kind of summarize this entire event, or these types of events, action at a distance, gravitational waves, electrical activity, and of course, coming from this at this topic from a completely different viewpoint, Velikovsky was highly ostracized because through the historical record, he saw these very same things happening. And so, as I said a million times before, Velikovsky wasn't studying astronomy or science. He was trying to study calendars and the fact that the ancient calendars had changed. What a mystery. Why would calendars change? Well, they would change if the Earth's rotation axis and a rotation rate had changed for some magical reason. And the magical reason that he found out was the Venus event. The fact that Venus was one of the great comets that occurred, probably in the 4,000 to 10,000 year ago time frame. And of course, the ancients talk about Nibiru, the great comet. And when, of course, Nibiru comes in, it has many companions. Venus was apparently one of the companions of Nibiru, as was Hale-Bopp, occurring probably around 4,200 years ago, not 3,600 years ago. And then Venus broke free gravitationally from the large group of comets, was captured by Jupiter, and eventually wound its way in to become the planet Venus that we see today, showing us a young, hot, steaming planet. So at any rate, I think it's very important to dwell on this topic for a bit because of the importance of seeing how political science can be, that this idea that the dinosaurs died from an impact crater, and then the big bandwagon of scientists jumping on this, and every time something happens in outer space, NASA's standard explanation is that, an asteroid collided with Earth or some other planet, and that's what caused whatever they're seeing. It's acceptable, it's nice, it's under the sanction of NASA, phony science, tier 2 science, and you can get a publication, you can continue to get your grant money. So for the last 25 years, literally, everything that happened in outer space, NASA claimed that an asteroid hit it. And that's their standard explanation. But now we find out that these collisions have been highly overestimated as far as their damaging results. And that's what I've said all along also, that these events would be local in nature. And understand that when this asteroid hit this region of northern Yucatan, there was both ocean and land involved. And so this idea that tsunamis caused worldwide destruction, once again, doesn't wash out with the facts, because very locally, right there at ground zero, there was no mass extinction of the species right there at the crater. And you can bet NASA and its all of the people that want to keep promoting this asteroid killed the dinosaurs thing are going to be up in fury and in arms over this new work. And these scientists, of course, are, of course, going to be very highly ostracized for creating a theory or creating this is actually data, this is not a theory, for presenting data that goes against the politically accepted ideas that they need desperately to keep people like me out of the arena. Let's put it that way. Okay, on to, I'm going to spend a bit of time talking about the flu. And, of course, you have heard this. There have been many radio shows dealing with the flu. And TV, it's on the news, it's on headlines. But, as usual, I have a little bit different, or actually a radically different way of looking at this. So I'm not going to repeat anything that you've heard anyplace else. But I do want to start out by saying this, that last Sunday, that would have been the 26th of April, I got a call from a friend of mine in Chicago. His name is James Jancic, and he's a talk show host there. Feet to Fire is his radio show, and once a month I do a little commentary, and then James plays it on the air. Many times we pre-record these so that it's pre-recorded, and at any rate, to make a long story short, the 26th was our day this month in April to do our short segment. So James called me up, and I said, what should we talk about? And I said, well, I think the Earth Day occurred, but I think the more important topic is the flu situation. And so I went into a long dissertation about how strange the news reporting was on the flu epidemic. And that was almost a bigger story than the flu epidemic itself. And I commented that very few people have actually died from this flu relative to a normal flu season. And, of course, it is unusual that the stronger people seem to be dying rather than the elderly and the children. But, obviously, something was going on here, and it centered around Mexico City. And then at the very end of that, this is the point I wanted to make. And at the very end of that interview with James, which aired Sunday night, now mind you, this is about 1 in the afternoon on Sunday when we're pre-recording this, I said, to date, the Center for Disease Control in the United States and Homeland Security, which of course is the overriding umbrella agency that controls everybody from the FBI to the Center for Disease Control and everybody else, Homeland Security had not made a statement of any kind relative to this. And I said, that is highly unusual. So we get done with the interview. It's probably 1:30 in the afternoon. And so I was closing down one of my computer systems. And all of a sudden I said, well, maybe I'll just quick go back and see what the latest is on the flu. There it was, nationally distributed on a Sunday afternoon, Homeland Security and some of the reporting agencies out of the White House made an announcement that there was a flu and that this was considered to be a national emergency. And they talked about preparation. And I thought, this is certainly funny timing. I just get done pre-recording a show saying that Homeland Security has made no announcement. It's Sunday afternoon. You would think most people in Washington would be out counting cherry blossoms or something. And all of a sudden, within 20 minutes, there's the head of Homeland Security and other agencies in the White House making a public announcement. And, of course, a lot of the shows, for example, James' show airs nationally, internationally, so it would have been like we were announcing the flu in the United States rather than Homeland Security. So I called James back and I said, James, it's kind of odd, but as soon as we finished that pre-recorded interview, Homeland Security came out like 20 minutes later and made a national public announcement. And he was kind of laughing, and he said, you don't suppose somebody's listening to our phone calls here? Anyway, that's a little bit of, too coincidental for comfort. But at any rate, the point is, there has been a very strange response from the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, and of course, WHO, the World Health Organization, and especially Homeland Security. Now, given the very unusual nature of this flu, let me go to, for example, some of the frequently asked questions announced on CNN, which is, of course, one of the very controlled news agencies. We call it Candy Nugget News for CNN. That's what I call it. Here's the first question. Why is it more deadly in Mexico than anywhere else it has surfaced? And the answer is, the short answer is, investigators don't know. Well, if they don't know why it's more prevalent in Mexico City, then wouldn't Homeland Security immediately say this could be a bio threat? But if you already knew that this bio threat was being planted, then why would you investigate it? You see what I mean? Now, it's extremely strange that Homeland Security, the agency that is entrusted with our safety, allegedly, is not investigating this strange flu outbreak as a criminal terrorist activity. That is the strangeness of what has happened up into the early times of this reporting. They're calling it an epidemic. They don't know where it comes from. They claim that it is a type 1, 2, and 3 flu, human, swine, and Asian flu, Asian being the bird flu, and that obviously smacks of human involvement in the creation of a strain of flu that somehow is built from parts of other types of flu. Wouldn't you immediately say, this is a terrorist event, we would be looking for this to be released in other major cities in the world, and of course Mexico City is a crossroads for travelers all over the world, so it would be a place where it would be disseminated very quickly. It's a tourist area, and related to many tourist areas in Mexico. There's travel between Mexico City and all the major resorts around Mexico, so, and it is a hub of business and vacation travel for North America, both Canada and the United States, and of course Europe. A lot of Europeans go to Mexico for vacation. So why would Homeland Security not even mention that this could be a possible terrorist threat? So anyway, I'll get back to that topic a little later. So as you see, this show is not exactly the kind of news you're going to read about on CNN. Let's look at some of the other questions and answers here. Isn't it interesting that they really don't talk about what causes people to die? They talk about inflammation, and this is very SARS-like. It's the kind of thing that people died from SARS. When people died from SARS, which, by the way, absolutely dropped off the map. Remember the SARS scare, and they said it came from a transformation of a swine flu in China, and they killed, of course, millions of chickens all over the world because they thought these chicken populations were infected. Probably none of that was even true. This was all scare tactics, and these, it's very clear that the reporting that is going on is fear-monger reporting, and the investigations that are being done are not the kind of investigations that should occur given what we're being told here. That all of a sudden this is concentrated in a city like Mexico City. Okay, let's talk about some of the predictions I made months ago. I said that the end of March, early April would be a time for another swine flu season worldwide, and that was due to the inferior conjunction of Venus, dated March 27th, this past spring. And, of course, that was very predictable. The whole idea of the Venus inferior conjunction being related to swine flu goes back to the 1200s. It's very well documented with the Chinese, who their Chinese medicine, of course, tracked this, and they related it to the inferior conjunction of Venus. This is well documented in the medical journals. And they even talk about the rise in sunspot numbers that occur during the inferior conjunction of Venus. That's when Venus moves around between Earth and the Sun. And so Venus is exactly between us and the Sun. So what would cause flu on Earth when Venus happens to be between us and the Sun? And, of course, there again, my plasma discharge comet model explains exactly what's going on. And in my predictions this year, I said, of course, March 27th, it was well known that that would be the inferior conjunction of Venus. I said there would be severe weather because of the issue of Comet Lulin in the mix here. And I'll talk about that and the dating of that in just a minute. But I said there would be, we would have a real a real March winter this year, which we did, and I said it would get especially intense at the end of March, which it did, and all of those predictions were exactly right. And then my prediction that we would have a swine flu epic, after March 27th and through early April was exactly correct. Now, all of a sudden, one concentrated area starts having a mixture of bird, human, and swine flu, all in the same virus, obviously man-made and originating in Mexico City. And so this is what obviously was confusing doctors and the medical industry, because you had a standard flu season due to the inferior conjunction of Venus, with an added man-made virus being dumped in Mexico City. Now, of course, the medical, this is something I was looking for, and no matter who does the topic of the flu, they seem to be just calling this an average flu season, although they are stating that everything they state coming out of the medical industry or from Homeland Security, or what you read in the standard medical columns on the internet, this is a man-made manufactured disease that is killing people and released in Mexico City. Obviously, there were a couple things going on here, but what it almost seems like with the very bizarre reaction of Homeland Security is that this was an event that wasn't meant to be. And now you can imagine that in a few days, by the way, I should mention this while I'm thinking of it, that May 2nd around the country are going to be a number of operations, let's put it that way. And this is how they're being presented to the public. It's called Operation Black Cat, and it's not something you're going to find very much information on. It's being, these things are being held in very small parts of Middle America, small towns, and what's going to happen is fire engines, emergency vehicles, police are all going to congregate in an area and pretend like they're involved in some kind of 911 operation. And they've announced this in localized areas and told the people all to come and watch. Now, doesn't that bit seem to be a bit strange that they're doing this in small communities around the country? And I believe, and this is what I've always said too, that the effect of 911, of crashing and taking down major buildings in New York City, didn't hit at the heartland of the United States. If small communities start being hit, then it would send a message like, we're vulnerable out here in these small communities. And of course, the small community police force or security forces are totally oblivious to the fact that 911 was a staged inside operation within our government. And, of course, the government at that time was compatible, let's put it that way, and then, of course, they needed the fall guy. And so, obviously, the point I want to make, though, is it's well known that Cheney was in a command center in one of the caves, apparently, and he was in a command center at the time when a national operation was underway, like a staged operation, and that's why there was no response from the Air Force to go after the jetliners. And so, at any rate, and a lot of the, air traffic control was masked so that what the air traffic controllers were seeing was different from reality. So all of this going on during 9-1-1, the year 2001, the 9-11 event. This Saturday, May 2nd, around the country in small localized communities, there will be similar operations. And it seems to be that's a favorite ploy, so that there is a diversion going on, so those agencies, when something real happens, they will be totally confused and we will be totally unaware of how they should be responding to a real situation that is going on while they are having their little operation. And once again, at least in many locales that I've been able to find this, it is called Operation Black Cat. It's very interesting, and there's some secondary meanings to Black Cat there. But it, be that as it may, all of the hubbub about the flu, and the point I'm trying to make is there was a very strange delayed reaction from Homeland Security, actually a good week after these the Mexico outbreak occurred. Thursday the 23rd, literally a week ago, is when Canada made its first announcement restricting travel to Mexico or advising no travel to Mexico. So why did the United States Homeland Security wait until Sunday afternoon? That is a very, very interesting question, which, of course, there is no answer for. But at any rate, as you can see, this show is looking at this flu epidemic in a very different light. Was it something that shouldn't have been, and the real event is right around the corner? And that's why the very strange reaction of Homeland Security. Of course, I've seen headlines, will this flu shut down the world economy? The point, I talked with another talk show host, Pastor Peters, and of course this show airs on his network on Friday night and Saturday morning. I talked with him the other day, and we were discussing this, and he said the numbers don't, I said, Pastor Peters, what's your view on this? And he said the numbers just don't add up. He said the number of people dying in Mexico from this, more people die, this is what he said to me, more people die in Mexico City in a day from abscess tooths infections than are dying with this flu. So why in a city of 20 to 25 million people, where half of the people don't even have a place to live, are dying on the streets of starvation and of other diseases, why are they reporting 20 people died of this flu? The numbers don't add up. And it seems to be like sensationalizing journalism. And of course, you all know that once our news media gets a hold of something, they want ratings, they want people to listen to them, so they will hype up anything to make it sound like a big deal. So the point is, and Pastor Peters made this point, and I'm making it too, that the numbers we are seeing don't add up as far as the response that is occurring. And then you see the very bizarre response from Homeland Security, Why are they not looking at this as a terrorist event? All of these questions beg answers. Why, on May 2nd, are many small communities around the country holding an event, some kind of an operations event, a false operations event, when, in fact, there's supposedly an epidemic of flu going around? Why would you bring all of these people in security agencies together and then invite the public to come and watch? Wouldn't that be something that you try and avoid? You would not want all of these people to come to one region or one localized area. None of this makes any sense unless there's a second event that is on its way, so to speak, and this is the smokescreen, or maybe it was never intended to be, and it got out of the bag a little early. But one thing it's doing, it's throwing a wrench in the real works, if that is in fact the case, that something is going to happen on May 2nd. And I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying it's very strange that there are, around the country, in small communities, these operations that are being staged on May 2nd. What's that all about? Going to quickly talk about the earthquakes this past week in Mexico City. The earthquake situation in Mexico, the San Andreas Fault runs all the way down the western coast of Mexico, between Baja and the main continental landform of Mexico. And so typically the earthquakes that rock Mexico City don't actually happen in Mexico City. For example, this past Monday, there was a 6.0 earthquake. And remember now that due to the revised Richter scale, that would really be a 7.0. But they, because the earthquake seemed to be getting bigger and bigger, they changed the Richter scale by a factor of 10. Every point on the Richter scale, it's logarithmic, so that means that every point on the Richter scale is a factor of 10 worse. So when they say a 6.0, it is on the old scale a 7.0. But anyway, the epicenter of this last Monday earthquake near Mexico City, Chilpancingo is the name of the town near the resort town of Acapulco. In 1985, there was an 8.1 on the Richter scale. And now look at that. That's the old Richter scale, 8.1. So this one was a 7 on the old Richter scale and occurring once again near Acapulco. And so what happens is the earthquakes actually occur far to the southwest of Mexico City. But the shock waves very much affect Mexico City because it's built on that old lake bed where the Aztecs lived, and it somehow that entire bowl shakes like a big bowl of jello, so to speak. And they say it's actually amplified there. So at any rate, this past week, along with the flu and the epidemic and all of the other problems going on in Mexico City, they get a 7.0 earthquake, 7.0 on the old Richter scale. I like to use the old Richter scale because it then can be compared, for example, with the 1985 major earthquake in Mexico City, which actually occurred in Acapulco but killed over 4,000 people in Mexico City. And I always like when they give these death tolls. How can they say 4,000 people died in Mexico City? Half of the people don't even have a house to live in. They're unaccounted for. How do you say 4,000 people? It could have been 40,000. It could have been 400,000. And nobody would know the difference. That's one of the problems with news reporting in Mexico City. And there again, what an ideal place to let go of some kind of bio-virus, because it's simply, you can't account for it. 90% of the poor people there would never even go to a hospital if they were sick. They're sick every day there. They're hungry, they're malnutrition, they lack water. And let me make another point here. I see that there's a question regarding why this occurred in Mexico City. This is posted April 27th on CNN. It says they're facts. They're frequently asked questions on swine flu. The last one says, where did this swine flu come from? How did the outbreak occur in Mexico? And the answer, researchers do not know. Well, gee, there again, why aren't they investigating this as a terrorist event? And if not, maybe they know who the terrorists are, if you know what I mean. Remember that SARS was ultimately linked back to the bio... that SARS was ultimately linked back to the bio labs at Dietrich, and that's when SARS automatically fell off the map. But back to this story about Mexico City, it says, this is the CNN question and answer, where did the swine flu come from and how did the outbreak occur in Mexico? The answer, researchers do not yet know. People usually get swine flu from infected pigs. For example, farmers handling infected pigs contact the virus. And then it says, however, some human cases have occurred with contact with pigs or places they inhabited. But then it goes on to say that since there are no pigs in Mexico City, no pig farms, that it's somewhat of a mystery. Now, if you ever go to Mexico City, excuse me, and most people do not go out to the places where I have been in Latin America, there are pigs roaming free around the streets in many of these areas. So what do you mean there's no pig farm in Mexico? Half of the very poor rural areas have pigs walking up and down the street right alongside the people. So CNN, once again, when you go and stay, Mr. CNN reporter, in your nice downtown Mexico City hotel, you don't get to see how the real people live in Mexico City. It really makes me angry. The terrible, absolutely terrible news reporting that you see in the media today, whether it's CNN or Fox, these people sit in their ivory tower newsroom and report the news, and they have no more idea what is news than the man in the moon. So at any rate, you can see that Mexico City would be a place for swine flu. And let me just give a little bit of a description relative to the swine, avian flu, and then human flu. The way these flus migrate, and this is back once again dealing with Chinese medicine, the way these flus migrate when they come in from the tail of Venus, and I'll be talking about that in just a minute. How does the tail of Venus, how is that associated with swine flu? And I'll explain that in terms of the plasma discharge comet model. But the swine flu, it apparently affects pigs first. Then it migrates and birds get it. Then the bird transmutates this into a form where it affects humans. So it goes from the swine to the bird to the human flu. And that's why this Mexico City is so strange, because it's all three of them that is affecting the human beings, and that's why it looks like a very much a designer flu, if you know what I mean. However, it is there ultimately mixed in with the flu, which came from the tail of Venus, this past inferior conjunction, which is well known about, as I said, through Chinese medicine and through the medical journals, that the swine flu, what is called swine flu because it starts with pigs, is concurrent with the inferior conjunction of Venus. Now, the question then that I want to answer tonight, and this is, once again, something you will not hear any place on any other radio show or in any other location, is how exactly is Venus the planet associated with swine flu? What on earth is going on there? And let me just preface this by saying that obviously there's no investigation into this in the medical community, because it would raise some very other distinctive questions. Like, why is there a tail on Venus? Wouldn't that imply that Venus was a comet? You see what I mean? So the real questions never get asked in the American Medical Association, the reporting agencies, the World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control, all stay away from that question. Nobody wants to talk about it because it obviously leads to some very touchy secondary questions. Then if Venus has a tail, why does Venus have a tail? You know, the plasma discharge comet model explains that. So at any rate, we know from my work that the plasma discharge comet model, any large object coming into the solar system, discharges the solar capacitor, and that's what a comet is. It's not some stupid little snowball. That is the most ridiculous NASA theory, or it's carried over by NASA. It was actually projected back in the 50s to counteract Velikovsky is really where it gained prominence. But be that as it may, as Venus the comet eventually became Venus the planet, it maintained its comet tail. It's very nebulous, it's out there, and that's because it discharges the solar capacitor in its vicinity as it moves in its near circular orbit around the sun. Earth has a comet tail, Mars has a comet tail, Jupiter has a comet tail. These are mistakenly labeled as magnetic tails in standard space science. But at any rate, Venus has a large comet tail. And that's where the viruses build up in the electrical environment in the tail. Oxygen, carbon, nitrogen, and hydrogen are the four atoms that are synthesized in the nucleotides, and that eventually builds DNA. So what is the swine flu virus? These are kind of corrupted pieces of DNA that form in outer space. When we pass through the Venus tail, which comes after the inferior conjunction, because the Venus tail is kind of sweeping out behind it in space, so we pass through it, maybe a week after the Venus inferior conjunction. And so that's where we pick up the swine flu virus. It drops in on the storm systems, and of course, California, Arkansas, Kentucky, those areas had storm systems, and a lot of the people got sick down there with the swine flu that came after that March 27th date. It was very predictable. And of course, Mexico had this. A lot of people in California have been sick with either flu-type symptoms, you know, respiratory, headache, nauseous, weak, lethargic, all of those feelings. And so that was due to the standard swine flu. This thing that they dropped in the middle of Mexico City is very much man-made. So at any rate, that's how viruses form in the tail of comets. And then I said, months ago, I said, okay, this is predictable. Expect the flu season after March 27th, 2009. And then when Comet Lulin showed up, something very interesting happened. On February 24th, 2009, Comet Lulin was on a retrograde orbit. February 24th was the conjunction, that is the direct electrical alignment of Earth, Comet Lulin, and the Sun. And of course, I predicted there would be very severe weather at that time. Comet Lulin was in a retrograde orbit, so as soon as it detached from Earth, we were already linking up electrically with Venus, getting ready for the March 27th Venus inferior conjunction of Earth. And Comet Lulin, during that time frame, between February 24th and March 27th, had linked up electrically with Venus. And what that did is it excited Venus, and so the tail of Venus, and so this year we went through a very different portion of the Venus tail than possibly we have ever moved through before. And what's clear is that the viruses that are building in the Venus tail depend on the region of the tail. And so we picked up a very different strain of flu this time than we have ever had before. But be that as it may, it does appear that there's a man-made flu also dropped into Mexico City, and it would be interesting, and of course the CDC and the health organizations don't trace those people back to where they were all probably all those people that died had something in common, where they were, did they get a shot, did they drink something. They must have all been in an area where they all picked up this virus, which was man-made and released. And that would point back to the fact that it was man-made. It was, in a sense, a bioterrorist event. And landing in Mexico City on top of the naturally occurring swine flu that was related to the Venus inferior conjunction. As I said, this is information you will not hear any place else. The fact that the Venus inferior conjunction is related to the flu virus is very well known. Chinese medicine goes back to the 1200s explaining this. The journals, the medical journals, have this well documented. Why is nobody talking about this in the major news media? They're claiming they don't know where this virus came from, but now it's confusing the medical establishment because there's a man-made virus. It's a very apparent, and I can't say that for 100% sure, but from what they're explaining, a human Asian, which is the bird flu, swine flu combination is a very much a man-made combination and dropped in the middle of the naturally occurring swine flu season. So at any rate, last week, I think I've covered most of the topics I wanted to deal with, and sometimes I repeat myself because I want you to go away from this show remembering these points. And so it's a teaching technique. You repeat yourself, you talk about something else, and you come back and you repeat yourself, because the main ideas that you want to present, you want people to leave with those ideas in their head and remember them. So at any rate, I'm going to talk a little bit about Earth Day last week. I talked the whole show, I gave a lecture dealing with the reality of Earth Day and how far we are from being at a point where Earth is really going to be greened, where corporations and greed and the use of resources by corporations. I had a very interesting conversation with a friend of mine this past week, and we came down to the conclusion, I was kind of simplified it. I said, say you're a coconut salesman, and you sell a coconut, or say you trade a coconut for a fish. Well, you want a fish that's commensurate in size with the coconut. But if the coconut salesman says, well, I need to make a profit from selling my coconut, I need a bigger fish because I want to make a profit. And so this idea that corporations and business entities have to make a profit off of their product, what that tells you is you're paying more for that product than what it's worth. Where does that money come from? Now, if every business is out there is making a profit, and their sole motivation in doing business is making a profit, where does that extra money come from? Well, the end result is that is one of the downfalls of Western economy and civilization, that the profit tiering is destroying our world. And you cannot make a profit unless you take resources, so the consumption of resources and profiteering are destroying our civilization. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.